And welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am the best main Aditi. This is part one of Welcome to Camp Nightmare. I know I'm kind of getting out of order. I still haven't done Let's Get Invisible. And then there's a long delay because I'm at this point in time, which is May 23rd, still waiting for Nick Sleazen to give me the other half of Night of the Living Dummy. Thank you to Alex once again for hosting everything, and thank you to Danielle for buying the books I needed. So I need to learn how to actually read off of a book as opposed to the computer screen, but thank you, I really do appreciate it. And she got some of the bonus give yourself Goosebumps books, so I don't know exactly what I'm going to do with those, but it'll be exciting. It might be done via Twitter or might be done live. I don't know. I'm drinking a Golden Pheasant beer from Slovakia that the guy at the liquor store told me to get, as opposed to my Steel Reserve. And he definitely underestimated my love for Steel Reserve, because this beer is good for people who like good beer. But I am not one of those people. All right, anyway, chapter one of Welcome to Camp Nightmare by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. I stared out the dusty window as the camp bus bounced over the narrow, winding road. I could see sloping red hills in the distance beneath a bright yellow sky. Stumpy white trees lined the road like fence posts. We were way out in the wilderness. We hadn't passed a house or farm for nearly an hour. The bus seats were made of hard blue plastic. When the bus hit a bump, we all bounced up off our seats. Everyone laughed and shouted. The driver kept growling at us, yelling for us to pipe down. Hey, kids! Oh, bus drivers. There were 22 kids going to camp on the bus. I was sitting in the back row on the aisle, so I could count them all. There were 18 boys and only 4 girls. Total sausage fest. I guessed that the boys were all going to Camp Nightmoon, which is where I was going. The girls were all going to a girls' camp nearby to learn about periods and training bras. The girls sat together in the front rows and talked quietly to each other. Every once in a while, they'd glance back quickly to check out the boys. The boys were a lot louder than the girls, cracking jokes, laughing, making funny noises, shouting out dumb things. It was a long ride, but we were having a good time. The boy next to me was named Mike. He had the window seat. Mike looked a little like a bulldog. He was kind of chubby, with a round face and pudgy arms and legs. He had short, spiky black hair, which he scratched at a lot. He was wearing baggy brown shorts and a sleeveless green t-shirt. We had been sitting together the whole trip, but Mikey didn't say much. I figured he was shy, or maybe just nervous. He told me that this was his first time at a sleepaway camp. It was my first time, too. And I had to admit, as the bus took me further and further away from home, I was already starting to miss my mom and dad just a little. I'm 12, but I've never really stayed away from home before. Even though the long bus ride was fun, I had this sad kind of feeling, and I think Mike was feeling the same way. He pressed his chubby little pig face against the window glass and stared out the red hills rolling by in the distance. "Are you okay, Mike?" I asked. "Yeah, sure, Billy," he replied quickly without turning around. I thought about my mom and dad. Back at the bus station, they had seemed so serious. I guess they were nervous, too, about me going off to camp for the first time. "We'll write every day," Dad said. "Do your best," Mom said, hugging me harder than usual. What a weird thing to say. Why didn't she say, "Have a good time"? Why didn't she say, "Do your best"? As you can tell, I'm a bit of a worrier. The only other boys I'd met so far were the two in the seat in front of us. One was named Colin. He had long brown hair down to his collar and wore silver sunglasses so you couldn't see his eyes. He acted kind of tough. And he wore a red bandana on his forehead, like Bret Michaels. He kept tying and untying the bandana. Oh my god, they might be on a Rock of Love Love bus and not even know it. Or it could be Battle Royale and they'll go under a tunnel and they'll get gassed. God, that's a great movie. Sitting next to him in the seat on the aisle was a big, loud kid named Jay. Jay talked a lot about sports and kept bragging about what a good athlete he was. He liked showing off his big, muscular arms, especially when one of the girls turned around to check us out. Jay teased Colin a lot and kept wrestling with him, gripping Colin's head in a headlock and messing up Colin's sick bandana. You know, just kidding around. Jay had wild, bushy red hair that looked as if it had never been brushed. He had big blue eyes. He never stopped grinning and horsing around. He spent the entire trip telling gross jokes and shouting things at the girls. "Hey, what's your name?" Jay called to a blonde-haired girl who sat at the front by the window. She ignored him for a long time, but the fourth time Jay called out the question, she turned around, her green eyes flashing. "Dawn," she replied. Then she pointed to the red-haired girl next to her. "And this is my friend, Dory." "Hey, that's amazing. My name's Dawn, too," Jay joked like a fucking idiot. A lot of the guys laughed, but Dawn didn't crack a smile. "Nice to meet you, Dawn," she called back to him. Then she turned back to the front. The bus bounced over a hole in the road, and we all bounced with it. "Hey, look, Billy," Mike said suddenly, pointing out the window. Mike hadn't said anything for a long time. I leaned toward the window, trying to see what he was pointing at. "I think I saw a prairie cat," he said, still staring hard. "Huh? Really?" I saw a clump of low white trees and a lot of jagged red rocks, but I couldn't see any prairie cats. "It went behind those rocks," Mike said, still pointing. Then he turned toward me. "Have you seen any towns or anything?" I shook my head. "Just desert." "But isn't the camp supposed to be near a town?" Mike looked worried. "I don't think so," I told him. "My dad told me that Camp Nightmoon is past the desert, way out in the woods." Mike thought about this for a while, frowning. "Well, what if we want to call home or something?" he asked. "They probably have phones at the camp," I told him. I glanced up in time to see Jay toss something towards the girls at the front. It looked like a green ball. It hit Dawn in the back of the head and struck her blonde hair. That's weird. Boarding. "Hey!" Dawn cried out angrily. She pulled the sticky green ball from her hair. "What is this?" She turned to glare at Jay. Jay giggled, his high-pitched giggle. "I don't know. I found it stuck under the seat," he called to her. Dawn scowled at him and heaved the green ball back. It missed Jay and hit the rear window, where it struck with a loud plop. Everyone laughed. Dawn and her friend Dory made faces at Jay. Colin fiddled with his red bandana. Jay slumped down low and raised his knees against the seat in front of him. A few rows ahead of me, two grinning boys were singing a song we all knew, but with really gross words replacing the original words. A few other kids began to sing along. Suddenly, without warning, the bus squealed to a stop, the tires skidding loudly over the road. We all cried out in surprise. I bounced off my seat and my chest hit the seat in front of me. Ugh, that hurt. As I slid back in the seat, my heart still pounding, the bus driver stood up and turned to us, leaning heavily into the aisle. "Oh!" Several loud gasps filled the small bus as we saw the driver's face. His head was enormous and pink, topped with a mop of wild, bright blue hair that stood straight up. He had long, pointed ears. He had huge red eyes. His huge red eyeballs bulged out from under their dark sockets, bouncing in front of his snout-like nose. Sharp white fangs drooped from his gaping mouth, a green liquid ooze over his heavy black lips. As we gogged in silent horror, the driver tilted back his monstrous head and uttered an animal roar. Chapter 2. The driver roared so loud the bus windows rattled. Several kids shrieked in fright. Mike and I both ducked down low, hiding behind the seat in front of us. "He's turned into a monster!" Mike whispered. "He's turned into a monster!" Mike whispered, his eyes wide with fear. Then we heard laughter at the front of the bus. I raised myself up in time to see the bus driver reach one hand up to his bright blue hair. He tugged, and his face slid right off. "Oh!" Several kids shrieked in horror. But we quickly realized that the face dangling from the driver's hand was a mask! Good stuff. He had been wearing a rubber monster mask. His real face was perfectly normal. I sighed with relief. He had pale skin, short, thinning black hair, and tiny blue eyes. He laughed, shaking his head, enjoying his joke. "This fools him every time," he declared. What a pathetic, lonely bus driver of a man, holding up the ugly mask. A few kids laughed along with him, but most of us were too surprised and confused to think it was funny. Suddenly, his expression changed. "Everybody out," he ordered gruffly. He pulled a lever, and the door slid open with a whoosh. "Where are we?" someone called out. But the driver ignored the question. He tossed the mask onto the driver's seat, then lowered his head so he wouldn't bump the roof. He quickly made his way out the door. I leaned across Mike and stared out the window, but I couldn't see much. Just mile after mile of flat, yellow ground, broken occasionally by clumps of real rock. It looked like a desert. "Why are we getting out here?" Mike asked, turning to me. I could see he was really worried. "Maybe this is camp," I joked. Mike didn't think that was funny. We were all confused as we pushed and shoved our way off the bus. Mike and I were the last ones off since we were sitting in the back. As I stepped onto the hard ground, I shielded my eyes against the bright sunlight, high in the afternoon sky. We were in a flat, open area. The bus was parked beside a concrete platform about the size of a tennis court. "This must be some kind of bus station or something," I told Mike. "You know, a drop-off point." He had his hands shoved into the pockets of his shorts. He kicked at the dirt, but didn't say anything. On the other side of the platform, Jay was in a shoving match with a boy I hadn't met yet. Colin was leaned against the side of the bus, being cool. The four girls were standing in a circle. It'd probably be a square. I don't think you can have a circle with four, but it doesn't matter. With four girls near the front of the platform, talking quietly about something, probably something stupid. I watched the driver walk over to the side of the bus and pull open the large luggage compartment. He began pulling out bags and camp trunks and carrying them to the concrete platform. A couple of guys sat down on the edge of the platform to watch the driver work. On the other side of the platform, Jay and some other guys were having a contest, tossing little red pebbles as far as they could. Mike, his hands still buried in his pocket, stepped up behind the sweaty bus driver. "Hey, where are we? Why are we stopped here?" Mike asked him nervously. The driver slid a heavy black trunk from the back of the luggage compartment. He completely ignored Mike's questions. Mike asked them again, and again. The driver pretended Mike wasn't even there. Mike made his way back to where I was standing, walking slowly, dragging his shoes across the hard ground. He looked really worried. I was confused, but I wasn't worried. I mean, the bus driver was calmly going about his business, unloading the bus. He knew what he was doing. "Why won't he answer me? Why won't he tell us anything?" Mike whined like a little bitch. I felt bad that Mike was so nervous, but I didn't want to hear any more of his stupid questions. He was starting to make me nervous, too. I wandered away from him, making my way along the side of the platform to where the four girls were standing. Across the platform, Jay and his buddies were still having their stone-throwing contest. Dawn smiled at me as I came closer. Then she glanced away quickly. "She's really, really pretty," I thought. Her blonde hair gleamed in the bright sunlight. "Are you from Center City?" her friend Dory asked, squinting at me, her freckled face twisted toward the sun. "No," I told her. "I'm from Midlands. It's north of Center City, near Outreach Bay." "I know where Midlands is," Dory snapped snottily. The other three girls laughed. I could feel myself blushing. "What's your name?" Dawn asked, staring at me with her green eyes. "Billy," I told her. "My bird's name's Billy," she exclaimed, and the girls all laughed again. "Where are you girls going?" I asked quickly, eager to change the subject. "I mean, what camp?" "Camp Nightmoon. There's one for boys and one for girls," Dawn answered. "This is an all-Camp Nightmoon bus." "Is your camp near ours?" I asked. I didn't even know there was a Camp Nightmoon for girls. Dory shrugged. "We don't know," Dawn replied. "This is our first year. All of us," Dory added. "Me too," I told them. "I wonder why we stopped here." The girls all shrugged. I saw that Mike was lingering behind me, looking even more scared. I turned and made my way back to him. "Look, the driver has finished carrying stuff out," he said, pointing. I turned in time to see the driver slam the luggage compartment door shut. "What's happening?" Mike cried. "Is someone picking us up here? Why did he unload all our stuff?" "I'll go find out," I said quietly. I started to jog over to the driver. He was standing in front of the open bus door, mopping his perspiring forehead with the short sleeve of his tan driver's uniform. He saw me coming and quickly climbed into the bus. He slid into the driver's seat, pulling a green sun visor down over his forehead as I stepped up to the door. "Is someone coming, Forrest?" I called to him. To my surprise, he pulled the lever and the bus door slammed right in my stupid face. The engine started up with a roar and burst of gray exhaust fumes. "Hey!" I screamed and pounded angrily on the glass door. I had to leap back as the bus squealed away, its tires spinning noisily on the hard dirt. "Hey!" I shouted. "You don't have to run me over!" I stared angrily as the bus bounced onto the road and roared away. Then I turned back to Mike. He was standing beside the four girls. They were all looking upset now. He left, Mike stammered as I approached him. "He just left us here in the middle of nowhere." We gazed down the road at the bus until it disappeared over the darkening horizon. We all grew very quiet. A few seconds later, we heard the frightening animal cries, very close and getting closer. Roar! Chapter 3! Roar! I'm an animal! "What's that?" Mike stammered. We turned in the direction of the shrill cries. They seemed to be coming from across the platform. At first, I thought that Jay and Colin and their friends were playing a joke on us, making the animal cries to frighten us. But then, I saw the scared, wide-eyed expression in their faces. Jay, Colin, and the others had frozen in place. They weren't making the noises. The cries grew louder, closer, shrill warnings. And then, staring into the distance beyond the platform, I saw them, small, dark creatures, keeping low, rolling rapidly along the flat ground, tossing their heads back and uttering excited shrieks as they came towards us. "What are they?" Mike cried, moving close to me. "Are they prairie wolves?" Dawn asked in a trembling voice. "I hope not," one of the other girls called out. We all climbed onto the concrete platform and were huddled behind our trunks and bags. The animal cries grew louder as the creatures drew near. I could see dozens of them. They scurried towards us over the flat ground as if being blown by the wind. "Help! Somebody help us!" I heard Mike scream. Next to me, Jay still had two of the red rocks from his rock throwing competition in his hand. "Pick up rocks!" he was shouting frantically. "Maybe we can scare them away!" The creatures stopped a few yards from the concrete platform and raised themselves up, menacing on their hind feet. Huddled between Mike and Jay, I could see them clearly now. They were wolves or wildcats of some sort, standing upright. They were nearly 3 feet tall. They had slender, almost scrawny bodies covered with spotty red-brown fur. Their paws had long, silvery nails growing out of them. Their heads were nearly as slender as their bodies. Tiny red weasel eyes stared hungrily at us. Their long mouths snapped open and shut, revealing double rows of silvery, dagger-like teeth. "No! No! Help!" Mike dropped to his knees like a little bitch. His entire body convulsed in a shudder of terror. Some of the kids were crying, others gaped at the advancing creatures in stunned silence. I was too scared to cry out, or move, or do anything. I stared at the row of creatures, my heart thudding, my mouth as dry as cotton. The creatures grew silent. Standing a few feet from the platform, they just eyed us, snapping their jaws loudly, hungrily. White froth began to drip from their mouths. They're going to attack!" a boy yelled. "They look hungry," I heard one of the girls say. The white froth poured thickly over their panting, pointed teeth. They continued to snap their jaws. It sounded like a dozen steel traps being snapped shut. Suddenly, one of them leapt on the edge of the platform. "No!" several kids cried in unison. We huddled closer together, trying to stay behind the pile of trunks and bags. Another creature climbed onto the platform. Then, three more. I took a step back. I saw Jay pull back his arm and heave a red rock at one of the frothing creatures. The rock hit the platform with a crack and bounced away. The creatures were not frightened. They arched their backs, preparing to attack. They began to make high-pitched chattering sounds and moved nearer. Nearer. Jay threw another rock. This one hit one of the advancing creatures on the side. It uttered a shrill eek of surprise, but it kept moving steadily forward. Its red eyes trained on Jay, its jaws snapping hungrily. "Go away!" Dory cried in a trembling voice. "Go home! Go away! Go away!" "Go away!" But her shouts had no effect, obviously. The creatures advanced. "Run!" I urged. "Run! We can't outrun them," someone shouted. The shrill cluttering grew louder, deafening, until it probably meant clattering there, but it was a typo anyway. Until it seemed as if they were surrounded. We were surrounded by a wall of sound. The ugly creatures lowered themselves to pounce. Run! I repeated. Come on! Run! My legs wouldn't cooperate. They felt rubbery and weak. Trying to back away from the attacking creatures, I toppled over backwards off the platform. I saw flashing stars as the back of my head hit the hard ground. They're going to get me. I realized I can't get away. Chapter 5. Yeah, Nick, I can sing too. I heard the siren-like attack cry. I heard the scrape of the creature's long toenails over the concrete platform. I heard the screams and cries of the frightened campers. Then, as I struggled frantically to pull myself up, I heard the deafening roar. At first, I thought it was an explosion. I thought the platform had blown up. But then, I turned and saw the rifle. Another explosion of gunpowder. White smoke filled the air. The creature spun around and darted away, silent now, their scraggly fur scraping the ground as they kept low, their tails between their furry legs. Ha ha! Look at him run! The man kept the rifle poised on his shoulder as he watched the creatures retreat. Behind him stood a long green bus. I pulled myself up and brushed myself off. Everyone was laughing now, jumping up and down joyfully, celebrating the narrow escape. I was still too shaken up to celebrate. They're running like jackrabbits, the man declared in a booming voice. He lowered the rifle. It took me a while to realize Ty had come out of the camp bus to rescue us. We didn't hear or see the bus pull up because of the attack cries of the animals. Are you okay, Mike? I asked, walking over to my frightened-looking new friend. I guess, he replied uncertainly. I guess I'm okay now. Dawn slapped me on the back, grinning. We're okay, she cried. We're all okay. We gathered in front of the man with the rifle. He was big and red-faced, mostly bald except for a fringe of curly yellow hair around his head. He had a blonde mustache under an enormous beak of a nose and tiny black bird eyes beneath bushy blonde eyebrows. Wow. That's a lot of bees. Hey, guys, I'm Uncle Al.
Hey, campers, I'm Uncle Al.
Sorry.
Hey guys, I'm Uncle Al. I'm your friendly camp director. I hope you enjoyed that welcome to Camp Nightmoon, he boomed in a deep voice.
I heard muttered replies. He leaned the rifle against the bus and took a few steps toward us, studying our faces. He was wearing white shorts and a bright green camp t-shirt that stretched over his big belly. Two young girls, also in green and white, stepped out of the bus, serious expressions on their faces.
Let's load up, Uncle Al instructed them in his deep voice.
He didn't apologize for being late. He didn't explain about the weird animals. He didn't ask if we were okay after that scare. The two counselors began dragging the camp trunks and shoving them into the luggage compartment of the bus.
Looks like a good group this year.
Looks like a good group this year, Uncle Al shouted. We'll drop you girls off the first across the river. Then we'll get your boys settled in.
What were those awful animals?
Dory cried to Uncle Al. He didn't seem to hear. We began to climbing onto the bus. I looked for Mike and found him near the end of the line. His face was pale. He still looked really shaken.
I was really scared, he admitted.
But we're okay, I reassured him. Now we can relax and have fun.
I'm so hungry, Mike complained. Mike, all you do is complain. I haven't eaten all day.
One of the counselors overheard him.
You won't be hungry when you taste the camp food, he told Mike.
We piled onto the bus. I sat next to Mike. I could hear the poor guy's stomach growling. I suddenly realized that I was starving too, and I was really eager to see what Camp Nightmoon looked like. I hoped it wouldn't be a long bus ride to get there.
How far away is our camp? I asked Uncle Al, who had slid into the driver's seat.
He didn't seem to hear me. Hey, Mike, we're on our way, I said happily as the bus pulled onto the road. Mike forced a smile.
I'm so glad to get away from there.
To my surprise, the bus ride took less than 5 minutes. We all muttered our shock at what a short trip it was. Why hadn't the first bus taken it all the way?
A big wooden sign proclaimed Camp Nightmoon came into the view.
Oh, fuck, I cannot read right now. Okay, let's... All right, Dune, get your head in the game here. Let's do this. And Uncle Al, okay, let me do this. Ugh.
and Uncle Al turned the bus onto a gravel road that led through a patch of short trees into the camp. We followed the narrow, winding road across a small brown river. Several small cabins came into view.
"Girls' camp," Uncle Al announced.
The bus stopped to let the four girls off. Dawn waved to me as she climbed down. A few minutes later, we pulled into the boys' camp. Through the bus window, I could see a row of small white cabins. On top of a gently sloping hill stood a large, white, shingled building. Probably a meeting lodge or mess hall. At the edge of a field, three counselors, all dressed in white shorts and green t-shirts, were working to start a fire in a large stone barbecue pit.
"Hey, we're gonna have a cookout," I exclaimed to Mike. I was starting to feel really excited. Mike smiled, too. He was practically drooling at the thought of food.
The bus came to an abrupt stop at the end of a row of small bunks. Uncle Al pulled himself up quickly from the driver's seat and turned to us.
"Welcome to the beautiful Camp Nightmare," he bellowed. "Step down and line up for your bunk assignments. Once you get unpacked and have dinner, I'll see you at the campfire."
We pushed our way noisily out of the bus. I saw Jay enthusiastically slapping another boy on the back. I think we were all feeling a lot better, forgetting about our close call. I stepped down and took a deep breath. The cool air smelled really sweet and fresh. I saw a long row of short evergreen trees behind the white lodge on the hill. Check out this reading. This is impeccable. As I took my place in line, I searched for the waterfront. I could hear the soft rush of the river behind a thick row of evergreens, but I couldn't see it. Mike, Jay, Colin, and I were assigned to the same bunk. It was Bunk 4. I thought the bunk should have a more interesting name, but it just had a number, Bunk 4. It was really small, with a low ceiling and windows on two sides. It was just big enough for six campers. There were bunk beds against three walls, and tall shelves on the fourth wall, with a little square of space in the middle. There was no bathroom. I guess it was in another building. As the four of us entered the bunk, we saw that one of the beds had already been claimed. It had been carefully made, the green blanket tucked in neatly, some sports magazine and a tape player rested on top.
"That must be our counselor," Jay said, inspecting the tape player.
"Hope we don't have to wear these ugly green t-shirts," Colin said, grinning. He was still wearing his silver sunglasses, even though the sun was nearly down, and it was just about as dark as night in the cabin. Jay claimed the top bunk, and Colin took the bed beneath his.
"Can I have the lower one?" Mike asked me. "I roll around a lot at night. I'm afraid I might fall off the top one."
"Yeah, sure, no problem," I said. "I wanted a top bunk anyway. It would be a lot more fun."
"Hope you guys don't snore," Colin said. "We're not going to get any sleep here anyway," Jay said. "We're going to party all fucking night."
He playfully slapped Mike on the back, so hard that Mike went sprawling into the dresser.
"Hey, Mike, why that hurt?"
"Sorry, guess I don't know my own strength," Jay replied, grinning at Colin. The cabin door opened, and a red-headed guy with dark freckles all over his face walked in, carrying a big gray plastic bag. He was tall and very skinny, and wearing white shorts and a green camp t-shirt.
"Hey, guys," he said, and dropped the large bag on the cabin floor with a groan.
He checked us out, then pointed to the bag.
"There's your bed stuff," he said. "Make your beds. Try to make them as neat as mine."
He pointed to the bunk against the window with the tape player on it.
Are you our counselor?
I asked. He nodded.
"Yeah, I'm the lucky one."
He turned and started to walk out.
"What's your name?" Jay called after him. "Larry," he said, pushing open the cabin door. "Your trunks will be here in a few minutes," he told us. "You can fight it out over drawer space. Two of the drawers are stuck shut."
He started out the door, then turned back to us.
"Keep away from my stuff."
The door slammed hard behind him. Peering out the window, I watched him lope away, taking long, fast strides, bobbing his head as he walked.
"Great guy," Colin muttered sarcastically. "Real friendly," Jay added, shaking his head.
Then we dived into the plastic bag and pulled out our sheets and wool blankets. Jay and Colin got into a wrestling match over a blanket they claimed was softer than the others. I tossed the sheet onto my mattress and started to climb up to tuck it in. I was halfway up the ladder when I heard Mike scream! God, I hate Mike.
Heyo! It is now June 21st. I have not read this for a while. This is my biggest hiatus from Goosebumps since I started. So, drinking a Keystone Light in a tall can, which the guy at the liquor store told me I was the first person to buy. I guess the all-Mexican neighborhood I live in doesn't appreciate the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series cross-marketing, which I can't say I appreciate myself, but anyway. Chapter 5. Mike was right beneath me, making his bed. He screamed so loud, I cried out and nearly fell off the ladder. I leapt off the ladder, my heart pounding, and stepped beside him, staring straight ahead, his mouth wide open in horror. Mike backed away from his bed. "Mike, what's wrong?" I asked. "What is it?" "Snakes!" Mike stammered, staring straight ahead at his unmade bed as he walked away. "Huh?" I followed his gaze. It was too dark to see anything. Colin laughed. "Not that old joke," he cried. "Larry put rubber snakes in your bed," Jay said, grinning as he stepped up beside us. "They're not rubber, they're real," Mike insisted, his voice trembling. Jay laughed and shook his head. "I can't believe you fell for that old gag." He took a few steps towards the bed, then stopped. "Hey!" I moved close, and the two snakes came into focus, raising themselves from the shadows. They arched their slender heads, pulling back as if they're preparing to attack. "They're real!" Jay cried, turning back to Colin. "Two of them!" "Probably not poisonous," Colin said, venturing closer. The two let out angry hisses, raising themselves high off the bed. They were very long and skinny. Their heads were wider than their bodies. Their tongues flicked from side to side as they arched themselves menacingly. "I'm scared of snakes," Mike uttered in a soft voice. "I'm scared of snakes." "They're probably scared of you," Jay joked, slapping Mike on the back. Mike winced. He was in no mood for Jay's horseplay. "We've got to get Larry or somebody," Mike said. "No way," Jay insisted. "You can handle them, Mike. There's only two of them." Jay gave Mike a playful shove toward the bed. He only meant to give him a scare, but Mike stumbled and fell onto the bed. The snakes darted in unison. I saw one of them clamp its teeth into Mike's hand. Mike raised himself to his feet. He didn't react at first. Then he uttered a high-pitched shriek. Two drops of blood appeared on the back of his right hand. He stared down at them, then grabbed the hand. "It bit me!" he shrieked. "Oh, no!" I cried. "Did it puncture the skin?" Colin asked. "Is it bleeding?" Jay rushed forward and grabbed Mike's shoulder. Hey, man, I'm really sorry," he said. "I didn't mean to." Mike groaned in pain. "It really hurts," he whispered. He was breathing really hard, his chest heaving, making weird noises as he breathed. The snakes coiled in the middle of his lower bunk began to hiss again. "You better hurry and get a nurse," Jay said, his hand still on Mike's shoulder. "I'll come with you." No, Mike stammered. His face was as pale as a ghost. He held his hand tightly. "I'll go find her." He burst out of the cabin, running at full speed. The door slammed behind him. "Hey, I didn't mean to push him, you know," Jay explained to us. I could see he was really upset. "I was just joking, just trying to scare him a little. I didn't mean for him to fall or anything." His voice trailed off. "What are we going to do about them?" I asked, pointing at the two coiled snakes. "I'll get Larry," Colin offered. He started toward the door. "No, wait," I called back to him. "Book, they're sitting on Mike's sheet, right?"
Am I missing something?
Book. Oh,
god damn it. That's a typo. I thought that maybe is his nickname. Yeah, he's nerdy. Like, I was imagining him as Minkus from the first season of Boy Meets World, but it should just say, "Look! They're sitting on Mike's sheet, right?"
Jay and Colin followed my gaze to the bed. The snakes arched themselves high, preparing to bite again. "So?" Jay asked, scratching his disheveled hair. "So, we can wrap them in the sheet and carry them outside," I said. Jay stared at me. "Wish I thought of that. Let's do it, man." "You'll get bit," Colin warned. I stared at the snakes. They seemed to be studying me, too. "They can't bite us with the sheet," I said. "They can try," Colin exclaimed, hanging back. "If we're fast enough," I said, taking a cautious step towards the bed, "we can wrap them up before they know what's happening." The snakes hissed out a warning, drawing themselves higher. "How did they get here anyway?" Colin asked. "Maybe the camp is crawling with snakes," Jay said, grinning. "Maybe you've got some in your bed too, Colin." He laughed. "Let's get serious here," I said sternly, my eyes locked on the coiled snakes. "Are we going to try this or not?"
Yeah, let's do it, Jay answered. I mean, I owe it to Mike. Colin remained silent. I'll bet I could grab one by the tail and swing him out through the window, Jay said. You could grab the tail of the other one and... Let's try my plan first, I suggested quietly. We crept over to the snakes, sneaking up on them. It was kind of silly, since they were staring right at us. I pointed to one end of the sheet, which was folded up on the bed. Grab it there, I instructed Jay. Then, pull it up. He hesitated. What if I miss? Or you miss? Then we're in trouble, I replied grimly. My eyes on the snakes, I reached my hand forward to the other corner of the sheet. Ready? On three, I whispered. My heart was in my mouth. I could barely choke out. One, two, three. At the count of three, we both grabbed for the ends of the sheet. Pull! I cried in a shrill voice. I couldn't believe what was coming from me. We pulled up the sheet and brought the ends together, making a bundle. At the bottom of the bundle, the snakes were wriggling frantically. I heard their jaws snap. They wriggled. Is that just wiggled with an... They wriggled...
I just fucked up the pacing.
They wriggled so hard, the bottom of the bundle swung back and forth. They don't like this, Jay said as we hurried to the door, carrying our wriggling, swaying bundle between us, trying to keep our bodies as far away from it as possible. I pushed open the door with my shoulder and we ran out onto the grass. Now what? Jay asked. Keep going, I replied. I could see one of the snakes poking its head out. Hurry! We ran past the cabins toward a small clump of shrubs. Beyond the shrubs stood a patch of low trees. When we reached the trees, we swung the bundle back, then heaved the whole sheet into the trees. It opened as it fell to the ground. The two snakes slithered out instantly and pulled themselves to the shelter under the trees. Jay and I let out sighs of relief. We stood there for a moment, hunched over, hands on our knees, trying to catch our breath. Crouching down, I looked for the snakes, but they had slithered deep into the safety of the evergreens. I stood up. I guess we should take Mike's sheet, I said. He probably won't want to sleep on it. Jay said, but he reached down and pulled it up from the grass. He balled it up and tossed it to me. It's probably dripping with snake venom, he said, making a disgusted face. When we got back to the cabin, Colin made his bed and was busy unpacking the contents of his trunk, shoving everything into the top dresser drawer. He turned as we entered. How'd it go? He asked, casually. Horrible, Jay replied quickly, his expression grim. We both got bit. Twice! You're a terrible liar, Colin told him, laughing. You shouldn't even try. Jay laughed, too. Colin turned to me. You're a hero, he said. Thanks for all your help, Jay told him sarcastically. Colin started to reply, but the cabin door opened and Larry poked his freckled face in. How's it going, he asked. You're not finished yet? We had a little problem, Jay told him. Where's the fourth guy, the chubby little sack of shit, Larry asked, lowering his head so he wouldn't bump into it on the door. Lowering his head so he wouldn't bump it on the door frame as he stepped inside. Mike got bit by... What is wrong with me? All right, dude, let's get it together. It's only like two more paragraphs in this chapter. We can do this. Mike got bit by a snake, I told him. There were two snakes in his bed, Jay added. Larry's expression didn't change. He didn't seem at all surprised. So where did Mike go? He asked casually, swatting mosquito in his arm. His hand was bleeding. He went to the nurse to get it taken care of, I told him. Huh? Larry's mouth dropped open. He went to find the nurse, I repeated. Larry tossed back his head and started to laugh. Nurse, he cried, laughing hard. What nurse? I feel like their parents should have read the brochure on this camp a little bit better. But, you know, when in Rome. Sorry, I just watched Anchorman. Chapter 6. The door opened and Mike returned, still holding his wounded hand. His face was pale, his expression frightened. They said there was no nurse, he told me. Then he saw Larry perched on top of his bunk. Larry, my hand, Mike said. He held the hand up so the counselor could see it. It was stained with bright red blood. Larry lowered himself onto the floor. I think I have some bandages, he told Mike. He pulled out a slender black case from under his bunk and began to search through it. Mike stood beside him, holding up his hand. Drops of blood splashed on the cabin floor. They said the camp doesn't have a nurse, Mike repeated. Larry shook his head. If you get hurt in this camp, he told Mike seriously, you're on your own. I think my hand is swelling a little, Mike said. Larry handed him a roll of bandages. The washroom's at the end of this row of cabins, he told Mike, closing the case and shoving it back under the bed. Go wash the hand and bandage it. Hurry, it's almost dinner time. He's not very sensitive. Holding the bandages tightly in his good hand, Mike hurried off to follow Larry's instructions. By the way, how do you guys get the snakes out of here? Larry asked, glancing around the cabin. We carried them out in Mike's sheet, Jay told him. He pointed to me. It was Billy's idea. Larry stared hard at me. Hey, I'm impressed, Bill, he said. That was pretty brave, man. Maybe I inherited something from my parents, I told them. They're scientists. Explorers, kind of. They go off for months at a time, exploring the wildest places on Earth and not paying a lick of attention to me. Well, Camp Night Moon is pretty wild, Larry said, and you guys had better be careful. I'm warning you. His expression turned serious. There's no nurse at Camp Night Moon. Uncle Al doesn't believe in coddling you little bitches. The hot dogs were all charred black, but we were so hungry we didn't care. I shoved three of them down in less than 5 minutes, like Kobayashi. I don't think I'd ever been so hungry in all my life. The campfire was in a flat clearing surrounded by a circle of round white stones. Behind us, the large white shingled lodge loomed over the sloping hill. Ahead of us, a thick line of evergreen trees formed a fence that hid the river from view. Through a small gap in the trees, I could see a flickering campfire in the distance on the other side of the river. I wondered if that was the campfire of the girls' camp. They're probably sitting all around doing their periods or whatever they do. I thought about Dawn and Dory. I wondered if the two camps ever got together, if I'd ever see them again. Dinner around the big campfire seemed to put everyone in a good mood. Jay was the only one sitting near me who complained about the hot dogs being burnt. But I think he put away 4 or 5 of them anyway. He was probably pretty hungry. Mike had trouble eating because of his bandaged hand. When he dropped his first hot dog, I thought he was going to burst into tears. By the end of dinner, he was in a much better mood. His wounded hand had swelled up just a little, but he said it didn't hurt as much as before. The counselors were easy to spot. They all wore identical white shorts and green t-shirts. There were 8 or 10 of them. All young guys, probably 16 or 17. They ate together quietly, away from us campers. I kept looking at Larry, but he never once turned around to look at any of us. I was thinking about Larry, trying to figure out if he was shy or if he just didn't like us campers very much. Suddenly, Uncle Al climbed to his feet and motioned with both hands for us all to be quiet.
I want to welcome you boys to Camp Night Moon, he began. I hope you're all unpacked and comfortable in your bunks. I know that most of you are first-time campers.
He was speaking quickly without any pauses between his sentences, as if he was running through this for the 1,000th time and wanted to get it over with.
I'd like to tell you some of our basic rules, he continued. First, lights out at 9 sharp. A lot of the guys groaned. You might think you can ignore this rule, Uncle Al continued, paying no attention to the reaction. You might think that you can sneak out of your cabins to meet, or take a walk by the river, or circle jerk and make the little fat kid eat the cookie. But I'm warning you, now that we don't allow it, and we will have very good ways of making sure that this rule is obeyed.
He paused to clear his throat. Some boys were giggling about something. Across from me, Jay burped loudly, which caused more giggles. Uncle Al didn't seem to hear any of this.
On the other side of that there river is the girls' camp, he continued loudly.
I think I had a way different voice for him previously. Whatever. Motioning to the trees,
you might be able to see their campfire. Well, I want to make it clear that swimming or rowing over to the girls' camp is strictly forbidden.
Several boys groaned loudly. They made everyone laugh. Even some of the counselors laughed. Uncle Al remained grim-faced.
The woods around Camp Night Moon are filled with grizzlies and tree bears, Uncle Al continued. They come to the river to bathe and to drink, and they're usually hungry.
This is the worst voice ever.
This caused another big reaction from all of us sitting around the fading campfire. Someone made a loud growling sound. Another kid screamed. Then everyone laughed.
You won't be laughing if a bear claws your head off, Uncle Al said.
I like how it went from, like, Colonel Sanders, like, Southern gentleman somehow, and now it's, like, Brian Fellows.
I'm Brian Fellows.
He turned to the group of counselors outside our circle.
Larry! Kurt! Come over here!
He ordered. The two counselors climbed obediently to their feet and made their way to the center of the circle beside Uncle Al.
I want you two to demonstrate to the new campus the procedure to follow when, if you're ever attacked by a grizzly bear.
Immediately, the two counselors dropped to the ground on their stomachs. They lay flat and covered the backs of their heads with their hands.
That's right. I hope you are paying a close attention,
the camp director thundered at us.
Cover your neck and head. Try your best not to move.
He motioned to the two counselors.
Thanks, guys. Y'all can get up.
Have there ever been any bear attacks here? I called out, cupping my hands so Uncle Al could hear me. He turned in my direction.
Two last summer, he replied.
Several boys gasped.
It weren't pretty, Uncle Al continued. It's hard to remain still when a huge bear was done pawing at your face and drooling all over you. But if you move...
His voice trailed off, leaving the rest of to our imaginations. I guess I felt a cold shiver run down my back. I didn't want to think about bears or bear attacks. What kind of camp did Mom and Dad send me to? I found myself wondering. I couldn't wait to call them and tell them all about what had happened already. Uncle Al waited for everyone to get silent, then pointed off to the side.
Do you see that cabin right over there?
He asked. In the dim evening light, I could make out a cabin standing halfway up the hill toward the lodge. It appeared a little larger than the other cabins. It seemed to be built on a slant, sort of tipping on its side, as if the wind had tried to blow it over.
Or it was built on an Indian burial ground! I want you to make sure that you see that cabin,
Uncle Al warned, his voice thundering out about the crackling of the purple fire.
That is known as the forbidden bunk. We don't talk about that bunk, and we don't go near it.
I felt another cold shiver as I stared through the gray evening light as the shadowy, tilted cabin. I felt a sharp sting on the back of my neck as I slapped a mosquito, too late to keep it from biting me. Let me check if this is actually recording. Yes, sir.
I'm going to repeat what I just said, Uncle Al shouted, still pointing to the dark cabin on the hill that is known as the Forbidden Bunk. It has been closed and boarded up for many a year. No one is to go near that cabin. Not no one, not ever.
I've been doing quite a bit of improv on him, sorry.
This started everyone talking and laughing. Nervous laughter, I think.
Why is the forbidden bunk forbidden? Someone called out.
We never talk about it,
Uncle Al replied sharply. Jay leaned over and whispered in my ear.
Let's go check it out.
I laughed, then I turned back to Jay uncertainly. You're kidding, right? He grinned in reply and didn't say anything. I turned back toward the fire. Uncle Al was wishing us all a good stay and saying how much he was looking forward to camp this year.
And one more rule, he called out. You must write to your parents every day. Every day. We want them to know what a great time you're having at Camp Night Moon.
I saw Mike holding his wounded hand gingerly. It's starting to throb, he told me, sounding very frightened. Maybe Larry has something to put on it, I said. Let's go ask him. Uncle Al dismissed us. We climbed to our feet, stretching and yawning, and started to make our way in a small groups back to the bunks. Mike and I lingered behind, hoping to talk to Larry. We saw him talking to the other counselors. He was at least a head taller than all of them. Hey, Larry, Mike called. But by the time we pushed our way through the groups of kids heading the other way, Larry had disappeared. Maybe he's going to our bunk to make sure we obey lights out, I suggested.
Let's go see, Mike replied anxiously.
We walked quickly past the dying campfire. It had stopped crackling, but still glowed a deep purple red. Then we headed along the curve of the hill toward bunk 4.
My hand really hurts, Mike groaned, holding it tenderly in front of him. I'm not just complaining. It's really throbbing. It's swelling up, and I'm starting to get the chills.
Larry will know what to do, I replied, trying to sound reassuring.
I sure hope so,
Mike said, shaking. We both stopped when we heard the howls.
Ooh.
My dog just looked at me mad.
Hideous howls like an animal in pain, but too human to be from an animal. Long, shrill howls that cut through the air and echoed down the hill. Mike uttered a gasp. He turned to me. Even in the darkness, I could see the fright on his face. Those cries, he whispered. They're coming from...
The Forbidden Bong.
Wait up one second.
Chapter 7. A few minutes later, Mike and I trudged into the cabin. Jay and Colin were sitting tensely on their beds. "Where's Larry?" Mike asked, fear creeping into his voice. "Not here," Colin replied. "Well, where is he?" Mike demanded shrilly. "I've got to find him. My hand." "He should be here soon," Jay offered. I could still hear the strange howls through the open window. "Do you hear that?" I asked, walking over to the window and listening hard. "Probably a prairie cat." Sorry, I had to click out. "Prairie cats don't howl," Mike told him. "Prairie cats screech, but they do not howl." "How do you know?" Colin asked, walking over to Larry's bunk and sitting down on the bottom bed. "We studied them in school," Mike replied. "Another howl made us all stop and listen." "It sounds like a man," Jay offered, his eyes lighting up excitedly. "A man who's been locked up in the forbidden bunk for years and years." Mike swallowed hard. "Do you really think so?" Jay and Colin laughed. "What should I do about my hand?" Mike asked, holding it up. It was definitely swollen. "Go wash it again," I told him, "and put some fresh bandage on it." I peered out the window into the darkness. Maybe Larry will show up soon. He probably knows where to get something to put on it. "I can't believe that there's no nurse," Mike whined. "Why would my parents send me to a camp when there's no nurse or infirmary or anything?" "Uncle Al doesn't like to coddle us," Colin said, repeating Larry's words. Jay stood up and broke into an imitation of Uncle Al.
"Stay away from that forbidden bunk," he cried in a booming, deep voice. He sounded a lot like him. "We don't talk about it. We'll never go near it."
We all laughed at Jay's impression, even Mike. "We should go there tonight," Colin said enthusiastically. "We should check it out immediately." We heard another long, sorrowful howl roll down the hill from the direction of the forbidden bunk.
"I don't think we should go," Mike said softly, examining his hand. He started to the door.
"I'm going to go wash this." The door slammed behind him. "He's scared," Jay scoffed. "I'm a little scared, too," I admitted. "I mean, those awful howls." Jay and Colin both laughed. "Every camp has something like the forbidden bunk." "The camp director makes it up," Colin said. "Yeah," Jay agreed. "Camp directors love scaring kids. It's the only fun they have in their pathetic lives. I heard that he goes home every night and he has banquet microwave dinners by himself and eats them in the dark because he's so sad to turn on the lights." He puffed out his chest and imitated Uncle Al again.
"Don't go out after the lights or you'll be never seen again and stuff,"
he thundered, then burst out laughing. "There's nothing in that forbidden bunk," Colin said, shaking his head. "It's probably completely empty. It's all just a joke, you know? Like camp ghost stories. Every camp has its own stupid ghost story." "How do you know?" I asked, dropping down onto Mike's bed. "Have you ever been to camp before?" "No," Colin replied, "but I have friends who told me about their camp." He reached up and pulled off his silver sunglasses for the first time. He had bright sky blue eyes, like big blue marbles, and I stared into them. I just had such strange feelings. The eyes, I just want to feel so safe in his arms. We suddenly heard the sound of a bugle. Really? Really, Dune? A bugle? We suddenly heard the sound of a bugle, repeating a slow, sad-sounding tune. That was pathetic. Wow, I really hate myself right now. Drowning sorrows. "That must be the signal for lights out," I said, yawning. I started to pull off my shoes. I was too tired to change or wash up. I planned to sleep in my clothes. "Let's sneak out and explore the forbidden bunk," Jay urged. "Come on, we can be the first ones to do it." I yawned again. "I'm really too tired," I told them. "Me too," Colin said. He turned to Jay. "How about tomorrow night?" Jay's face fell in disappointment. "Tomorrow," Colin insisted, kicking his shoes in the corner and starting to pull off his socks.
"I wouldn't do it if I were you," the voice startled all three of us.
We turned to the window where Larry's head suddenly appeared from out of the darkness. He grinned in at us. "I'd listen to Uncle Al if I were you," he said. How long had he been listening to us? I wondered, was he deliberately spying on us? The door opened. Larry lowered his head as he loped in. His grin had faded. "Uncle Al wasn't kidding around," he said seriously. "Yeah, sure," Colin replied sarcastically. He climbed up to his bed and slid beneath the wool blanket. "I guess the camp ghost will get us if we go after lights out," Jay joked, tossing a towel across the room. "Now,
No ghost, Larry said softly. But Saber will. He pulled out his drawer and began searching for something inside. Huh? Who's Saber? I asked, suddenly wide awake. Saber is an it.
Ooh, tranny.
Larry answered mysteriously. Saber is a red-eyed monster who eats a camper every night, Colin sneered. He stared down at me. There is no Saber. Larry's just giving us another phony camp story. Larry stopped searching his drawer and gazed up at Colin. No, I'm not, he insisted in a low voice. I'm trying to save you guys some trouble. I'm not trying to scare you. Then what is Saber? I asked impatiently. Larry pulled a sweater from the drawer, then pushed the drawer shut. You don't want to find out, he replied. Come on, tell us what it is, I begged. He isn't going to, Colin said. I'll tell you guys only one thing. Saber will rip your fucking heart out, Larry said flatly. Jay snickered. Yeah, sure. I am serious, Larry snapped. I am not kidding you guys. He pulled the sweater over his head. You don't believe me? Go out one night. Go out and meet Saber. He struggled to get his arm into the sweater sleeve. But before you do, he warned, leave me a note with your address so I'll know where to send your stuff.
All right, so I've been drinking this tall can of Keystone Light this whole time, and it doesn't taste right. Not that Keystone Light generally tastes correct, but I just looked at the bottom, and it's been expired for over a month. So it's not like milk. I can still drink this, right? I'm going to, but... I wish I could get a response from you people. I think this might be a horrible idea.
Chapter 8. We had fun the next morning. We all woke up really early. The sun was just rising over the horizon to the south, and the air was still cool and damp. I could hear birds chirping. The sound reminded me of home. As I lowered myself to the floor and stretched, I thought of my mom and dad and wished I could call them and tell them about the camp. But it was only the second day. I'd be too embarrassed to call them on the second day.
Let me check if it's recording. Yep.
I was definitely homesick. But luckily, there wasn't any time to feel sad. After we pulled on fresh clothes, we hurried up to the lodge on the hill, which served as a meeting hall, theater, and mess hall. Long tables and benches were set up in straight rows in the center of the enormous room. The floorboards and walls were all dark redwood. Redwood ceiling beams crisscrossed high above our heads. There were no windows, so it felt as if we were in an enormous dark cave. The clatter of the dishes and cups and silverware was deafening. Our shouts and laughter rang off the high ceiling, echoed off the hardwood walls. Mike shouted something to me from across the table, but I couldn't hear him because of the racket. It's like Harry Potter where they eat and...
And I never went to camp, so I just have to relay everything to Harry Potter. I apologize.
Some guys complained about the food, but I thought it was okay. We had scrambled egg squares, bacon strips, fried potatoes, and toast, with tall cups of juice. I never eat breakfast that big at home, but I found that I was really starved, and I gobbled it up. After breakfast, we lined up outside the lodge to form different activity groups. The sun had climbed high in the sky. It was going to be really hot. Our excited voices echoed off the sloping hill. We were all laughing and talking, feeling good. Larry and two other counselors, clipboards in hand, stood in front of us, shielding their eyes from the bright sun as they divided us up into groups. The first group of about 10 boys headed off to the river for a morning swim. Some people have all the luck, I thought. I was eager to get in the waterfront and see what the river was really like. As I waited for my name to be called, I spotted a payphone on the wall of the lodge. My parents flashed into my mind. Maybe I'll call them later, I decided. I was so eager to describe the camp to them and tell them about my new friends. Okay, guys, follow me to the ball field, Larry instructed us. We're going to play our first game of scratch ball. About 12 of us, including everyone from my bunk, followed Larry down the hill toward the flat, grassy area that formed the playing field. I jogged to catch up to Larry, who always seemed to walk at top speed, stretching out his long legs as if he were in a terrible hurry. "Are we going to swim after this?" I asked. Without slowing his pace, he glanced up at his clipboard. "Yeah, I guess," he replied. "You guys all need a swim. We're going to work up a sweat." You ever play scratch ball before? Jay asked me as we hurried to keep up with Larry. Yeah, sure, I replied. We played a lot at school. Larry stopped at the far corner of the wide green field where the bases and batter's square had all been set up. He had made us line up and divided us into two teams. Scratchball's an easy game to learn. The batter throws the ball in the air as high and as far as he can. Then he's got to run the bases before someone on the other team catches the ball, tags him with it, or throws him out.
Is Scratchball real? Did I just read too many comics and now I don't know what sports are?
Larry started calling out names, dividing us into teams, but he called out Mike's name. Mike stepped up to... Mike stepped up to Larry, holding his bandaged hand tenderly. I don't think I can play, Larry, Mike stammered. Come on, Mike, don't whine, Larry snapped. But it really hurts, Mike insisted. It's throbbing like crazy, Larry. The pain is shooting all the way up and down my side, and look! He raised the hand to Larry's face. It's all swelled up. Larry pushed the arm away gently with his clipboard. Go sit in the shade, he told Mike. Shouldn't I get medicine or something like that? Mike asked shrilly. I could see the poor guy was in really bad shape.
Alright, I seriously can't drink this tall again. It's disgusting. What up?
Alright, I'm back. That thing was absolutely repulsive. And I legitimately feel really sick right now. I'm hoping it's all kind of mental. But, I went back to the liquor store, and the guy, after I explained to him that he sold me booze last night that was expired over a month ago, he laughed and said, that sucks, so that's good. So I got 3 32-ounce bottles of King Cobra, which I'm hoping will combat the effects of the expired Keystone Light. So let's see. Let's see if it works. All right, let's hope this King Cobra isn't just snake oil. All right, you still got it, Dune. All right, where was I? Just sit over there by that tree, Larry ordered, pointing to a clump of short, leafy trees at the edge of the field. We'll talk about it later. Larry turned away from Mike and blew a whistle to start the game. I'll take Mike's place in the blue team, he announced, jogging onto the field. I forgot about Mike as soon as the game got underway. We were having a lot of fun. Most of the guys were pretty good scratchball players, and we played much faster than my friends do back home at the playground. My first time up at the batter's square, I heaved the ball really high, but it dropped right into a fielder's hands, and I was out. My second time up, I made it to the three bases before I was tagged out. Larry was a great player. When he came up to the batter's square, he tossed the ball harder than I'd ever seen anyone toss it. It sailed over the fielder's heads, and as they chased after it, Larry rounded all the bases, his long legs stretched out gracefully as he ran. By the fourth inning, our team, the blue team, was ahead 12-6. We had all played hard and were really hot and sweaty. I was looking forward to that swim at the waterfront. Colin was on the red team. I noticed that he was the only player who wasn't enjoying the game. He had been tagged out twice and he'd missed an easy catch in the field. I realized that Colin wasn't very athletic. He had long, skinny arms without any muscles. And he also ran awkwardly. In the third inning, Colin got into an argument with a player on my team about whether a toss had been foul or not. A few minutes later, Colin argued angrily with Larry about a ball which he had claimed should have been out. He and Larry shouted at each other for a few minutes. It was no big deal, a typical sports argument. Larry finally ordered Colin to shut the fuck up and get back to the field. Colin grudgingly obeyed, and the game continued. I didn't think about it again. I mean, what kind of arguing happens all the time? That kind of arguing happens all the time in ball games, and there are guys who enjoy the arguments as much as the game. But then, in the next inning, something strange happened that gave me a really bad feeling and made me stop and wonder what was going on. Colin's team came to bat. Colin stepped up to the batter's square and prepared to toss the ball. Larry was playing the outfield. I was standing nearby, also in the field. Colin tossed the ball high and not very far. Larry and I both came running to get it. Larry got there first. He picked up the small, hard ball on the first bounce, drew his arm back, and then I saw his expression change. I saw his features tighten in anger. I saw his eyes narrow. His copper-colored eyebrows lowered in concentration. With a loud grunt of effort, Larry heaved the ball as hard as he could.
It struck Colin in the back of the head, making a loud crack as it hit. Colin's silver sunglasses went flying in the air. Colin stopped short and uttered a short, high-pitched cry. His arms flew up as if he'd been shot. Then his knees buckled. He collapsed in a heap, face down on the grass. He didn't move. The ball rolled away over the grass. I cried out in shock. Then I saw Larry's expression change again. His eyes opened wide in disbelief. His mouth dropped open in horror. No, he cried. It slipped. I didn't mean to throw it at him. I didn't mean it. Honest, I really didn't want to do that. I'm so sorry. I didn't really want to do it at all. I knew Larry was lying. I had seen the anger in his face before he threw the ball. I sank down to my knees on the ground as Larry went running toward Colin. I felt dizzy and upset and confused. I had this sick feeling in my stomach. The ball slipped, Larry was yelling. It just slipped. Liar, I thought. Liar, liar, liar. I forced myself up on my feet and hurried to join the circle of guys around Colin. When I got there, Larry was kneeling over Colin, raising Colin's head off the ground and gently with both hands. Colin's eyes were wide open. He stared up at Larry groggily and uttered low moans. Give him room! Larry was shouting. Give him room! He gazed down at Colin. The ball slipped! I'm really sorry! The ball slipped! Colin moaned. His eyes rolled around his head. Larry pulled off Colin's red bandana and mopped Colin's forehead with it. Colin moaned again. His eyes closed. Help me carry him to the lodge, Larry instructed two guys from the red team. The rest of you guys get changed for your swim. The waterfront counselor will be waiting for you. I watched as Larry and the other two guys hoisted Colin up and started to carry him toward the lodge. Larry gripped him under his shoulders. The two boys awkwardly took hold of his legs. The sick feeling in my stomach hadn't gone away. I kept picturing the intense expressions of anger on Larry's face as he heaved the ball at the back of Colin's head. I knew it had been deliberate. I started to follow them. I didn't know why. I guess I was so upset. I wasn't thinking, clearly. They were nearly to the bottom of the hill when I saw Mike catch up to them. He ran alongside Larry, holding his swollen hand. Can I come too? Mike pleaded. Someone has to look at my hand. It's really bad, Larry. Please, can I come too? Yeah, you'd better, I heard Larry reply curtly. Good, I thought. Finally, someone is going to pay some attention to Mike's snake-bit wound. Ignoring the sweat pouring down my forehead, I watched them make their way up the hill to the lodge. This shouldn't have happened, I thought. Suddenly, feeling a chill despite the hot sun, something is wrong. Something is terribly wrong. How was I to know that the horrors were just beginning? That's a little less than halfway through the book, but I'm feeling sick from the bad Keystone Light Tolkien, and that seems like a good stopping point. You know, how was I to know that the horrors were just beginning? So, sorry for the delay. I'll keep it up again. I apologize, I'm only one man in goosebumps and reading them and doing stuff. So, stay spooky, bitches!